All right, boys and girls, welcome to hour number two of Radio X here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. We're live Sunday, December 5th, 2010. And again, I want to thank Brian Fitzpatrick from WorldNet Daily for stopping by for hour number one. Take it for what it's worth, folks. I thought he had some interesting things to say, and there are some very good articles over at WorldNet Daily on some topics. Again, you have to learn to disseminate or to, I should say, not disseminate, but I should say to figure out what you want to take in and what you want to toss by the wayside. But at least they cover some articles and some news stories that the mainstream tends to ignore. So I always give credit where credit is due. So there you go. Take it for what it's worth. Now, in hour number two today, we're going to do something a little different, too. We're going to talk about a topic that I generally don't discuss on this program, and we're going to bring on John DiNardo. He's a researcher on weather phenomenon and the producer and host of a show entitled Planet X and Bible Prophecy. That's heard Sunday nights at 9 on the Orion Talk Radio Network, also on various shortwave stations around the country that broadcast, of course, the show around around the world. John DiNardo, good afternoon, sir. Thanks for stopping by today.
Hello, Jim. It's a pleasure being with you and your audience.
I appreciate coming on. Now, John, you know, never let it be said that I'm not open-minded, and I'm willing to talk about topics that I may not even be well-versed on. So that's what you're here to do today. Now, before, this is a short segment, John, by the way. So with the couple of minutes we have before we take our first break, how about a little background on, you know, how you got involved in really started looking, when you started looking at what was going on around us with regard to the weather. And I know that you were, you're a retired electrical engineer, but how did you get involved in this this whole...
And also a high school physics teacher.
A high school physics teacher. I apologize for neglecting to mention that.
Oh, it's okay. But the reason I mentioned that is because both fields, electronics, electrical engineering, and the field of science education, it gave me a necessary foundational education that I needed to understand what was happening here. And then when I found out about Planet X, it all made sense. It also made sense not only from a scientific point of view, but it made sense from a prophecy point of view. Not only the Bible, but other prophetic pronouncements from peoples all over the world throughout the ages have been prophesying that this planet would come in, would be coming in and causing tremendous devastation to Earth, not by striking Earth, because it will pass many millions of miles away from Earth. However, the gravitational force field and the electromagnetic force field that this huge brown dwarf star exerts on any celestial bodies is enough to cause to actually pull up the land surfaces, the crustal areas, and also beneath the Earth's surface, the mantle, and also disturbing the liquid molten, mostly molten iron core of the Earth. So the ramifications of all these molestations from this passing planet are going to be tremendous. And to answer your question, how did I understand it all? It just, when I first heard about it, I began to look at the evidence that Mark Hazlewood had presented. Mark Hazlewood wrote the first books where he pulled together, he actually did a mosaic. He pulled together lots of the esoteric information that came from many centuries ago and also from recent days, recent years from Zechariah Sitchin. He pulled it all together, created a mosaic that painted more or less a pretty simplistic picture of what is happening and what is about to, the devastation that is about to occur to planet Earth. And that's how I knew, when I compared it to my knowledge of science and electrical phenomena, I realized that it all made sense.
All right, John, hold that thought right there. We have to take the first break of the show. Back with more, my guest John DiNardo. Stay tuned, folks. All right, folks, it's Radio X here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. We're coming to you live Sunday, December 5th, 2010, hour number two in progress. And my guest in this hour is John DiNardo, a researcher on weather phenomenon and producer and host of Planet X and Bible Prophecy. And John, I guess a good place to start when we're talking about what is going on weather-wise around the planet and, you know, some of your investigations. And I know that you have a couple of mainstream articles, actually, that do a pretty good job of explaining this and proving your point. So before we get to that, I want to make it clear there have been a lot of people in the chat room talking about what they heard about the snow that fell here in parts of Western New York. I don't know if you're privy on all of the info. I know that the mainstream media tends to a lot of time make it sound like the entire area of Western New York has been buried under snow. That's not true. What happened, though, was a very quick storm popped up here off Lake Erie, combined with winds, pretty good winds, gusts about 35, 40 miles an hour, and only lasted about 24 hours, John, and it cut a swath about 10 miles wide, no wider than that, and dumped about 3 feet of snow in its path within 24 hours. Of course, it shut down part of the South Buffalo and some of the southern towns. Where I live, though, the sun was shining, and there was no evidence that there was anything going on. These are the type of phenomenon you claim to be seeing more and more of, no?
Yes, right. The weather is becoming very bizarre. Ever since 2004, I have been regularly videotaping nothing but severe weather reports from the Weather Channel, and I have about 250 hours on six-hour videotapes, many, many six-hour videotapes of severe weather reports from the Weather Channel between 2004 to 2009. Around 2009, I really ceased recording all this because I had so much information I just couldn't. It just proved its point to, you know, repeatedly without any need to further proof. And it was taking too much of my time, but we have these weather events that are all types of weather events are extreme. For example, the snowstorm that you mentioned in one localized area. I've seen this happen many times in my viewing of the Weather Channel, where one area will be extremely cold, and just a few miles away, there'll be a 20 to 40 degree temperature difference between two locales. These are the kind of weather anomalies we're expecting, but you can just use your imagination of what kind of weather events normally occur, and then just these abnormalities can be applied to all types of weather events. For example, I've got numerous videotape recordings from the Weather Channel of softball-sized hail, baseball-sized very frequently, softball-sized, you know, a number of occasions. I have videotapes, for example, of a car hanging from the top of a tree in Virginia following severe flooding. The car floated up somehow. I guess it must have been turned upside down. It floated up. It was actually hanging from the top limb of a tree. We have new kinds of windstorms called derechos and haboobs. A haboob is sort of like the kind of the desert storm you would see in the Middle East with the huge clouds of dust. There was a red dust cloud in Australia. We've got that on videotape. And it just goes on and on. The wind storms have my average wind speed, as I watch it each day on the Weather Channel, the average wind speed has gone from what used to be about 5 miles an hour back in 2004 up to around 12 to 15 miles an hour. And it's getting worse. We have had seen roofs blown off of houses. The incidence of tornadoes is much greater than it was before. We have hurricanes on land now, straight line windstorms, and the flooding has just been horrifying.
Well, whatever the case is, John, too. I mean, obviously, you know, not everyone buys into that we have this rogue planet in the solar system. I've read several news reports from the alternative news media claiming that some of this has to do with geoengineering with respect to our government and other governments, in particular HARP. And if you recall, a few years ago, there was that massive earthquake, for example, in China. And the immediate news report that came out of China was they immediately blamed it on HARP. And then that story was quickly buried. Now, but you say, you know, your philosophy is, though, that this, you don't believe it has anything to do with that.
No, HARP is actually, they do create earthquakes with HARP, and that's what that's a confusing factor, because we have the government engaging in these manipulated weather events, meteorological engineering, at the same time that this planet is coming in. because I guess there happens to be a coincidence of technology where the government is using, attacking their enemies with, well, Zbigniew Brzezinski in his book, I think it was The Technocratic Age, way, you know, at least 10 or 15 years ago. So we know whether warfare exists. We have high-level military officers who have attested to that, using Tesla technology to manipulate the weather. However, we have also this natural occurrence of this brown dwarf star. So we have two causes. The major cause, the overpowering cause, is this brown dwarf star. And people will soon see. I don't ask people to believe what I'm telling them, that this brown dwarf star is the major cause of these horrific geological and meteorological events. I don't ask you to believe it. I just ask you to just imprint it in your memory. Remember it very well, because soon you're going to see horrific events that are going to be devastating, so devastating that even the power elite will be going underground. And you know that they're not creating disasters that are going to come tumbling down on their own heads. They already have underground cities, and incidentally, I just stumbled across a major piece of evidence just now in my comments that indicates that these disasters are not solely caused by the power elite, because the power elite themselves have constructed trillion-dollar underground facilities, which have been recorded on videotape by Governor Jesse Ventura on the True TV program. It's a landmark broadcast where he and his producer Michael Braverman went underground beneath the Denver airport in the bowels of Cheyenne Mountain in Colorado. And they videotaped these extensive, elaborate underground facilities. And Michael Braverman, the producer, spoke with Colonel Wynn, W-Y-N-N, who was a former military, and now he is the chief of security for the entire facility at Cheyenne Mountain. And Michael Braverman said, when the disasters occur on Earth, can I come down and get a place to hide? And Colonel Wynn said, when those 13-ton steel doors are slammed shut, you can knock all day long. You're not going to get in. And then Michael Braverman said, well, would your troops here, your highly armed troops, fire upon American citizens? And Colonel Wynn said, we'll do whatever we have to do to protect this facility. You know, so, and they were talking about, in this program, American citizens would be panicked when the disasters occur, especially the solar scorching, which was basically prophesied in the movie Knowing, K-N-O-W-I-N-G.
All right, John, you got to hold it right there for a moment. We're going to another commercial break. We'll pick that up when we come back. John DiNardo, my guest, researcher on weather phenomenon. Back in three.
This is Jack Blood, your radio gun. You're listening to Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of tyranny smashing cutting edge talk radio.
All right, folks, it is Radio X here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Jimmy X. Thank you, by the way, for tuning in this afternoon. And we're talking about a topic this hour that we generally don't discuss on this show, but there are very few people that are discussing, and I thought we'd throw it out there with a gentleman that I know to be quite well-versed on it, and that is what's going on with weather phenomenon and his take regarding Planet X moving into our solar system. And, John, there's a couple of folks that are listening in this afternoon that would like to chat with you on the phone. You want to take a couple of calls?
Sure.
All right, let's go first to LaForest in Georgia. LaForest, you're on the air, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm kind of curious, as you were talking about HAARP, now I'll be the first to admit I don't know a whole lot about it, but I've been tracking earthquakes and things like this taking place around the country, and I've noticed that not long ago there were some 25 earthquakes all around the world. And what I found interesting, and this was all just within a few weeks' time, and what I found interesting was every single one of them were registered at exactly 10 kilometers, which is 6.2 miles below the surface. And I'm wondering if your guest may comment on if he thinks that maybe this might have something to do with HARP, or if this could be just a coincidence and natural, if you will.
All right, John, what do you say to that?
Well, from what I understand is some of these HARP-generated earthquakes can be fingerprinted, identified by their depth. I don't know much about it, but I seem to recall that the shallower earthquakes, which may be the ones you're referring to, can be generated by Tesla technology. And this could be in fact the case, especially if these earthquakes occurred around the same time period. It would help me. I could check it out and try to find out what earthquakes occurred. If you can tell me what the time frame was, when did this happen, and over a period of how many weeks did these earthquakes occur?
This was just about a month and a half ago, and this was over, I believe it was a one-month period, and I can actually give you the locations around the world and how many there were in those locations, because I have them right in front of me, all my notes. I mean, we're talking two in China, one in Kuril, one off Alaska, three off the coast of Oregon, one down around Mexico, three around Panama, three around the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. There was one around the Azores Island region. There was one around the Jan Mayen Island region. And all of this was in just 1 week. And this was, and last month there were a total of 200 earthquakes, but in that 1 week there were 25 of them. And all of them, like I said, were registered at 10 kilometers or 6.2 miles below the Earth's surface.
Right.
Now, I find that to be a little hard to swallow as a coincidence. But like I said, I don't really know a lot about HARP.
Are they considered shallow earthquakes, 6.2 miles? I think so. That would be a clue as to whether it was...
These were pretty devastating from what I remember.
Right. Okay. I have to take a look. You know, what we can do is, certainly I agree. It sure seems to me, although how many people can really prove the secret operations that the government is doing, but it certainly seems like there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that they can and do produce earthquakes. We can find out by putting together some of the evidence. For example, that we know that natural phenomena such as solar flares and coronal mass ejections from the sun create earthquakes. So we can take a look and see if there was any extraordinary solar activity a month and a half ago, which would have been around the middle of October, and try to see if there is a connection between the sun and these earthquakes. If there wasn't, then, you know, it looks to be more likely that it was the government. However, nobody's going to ever, I don't think we can yet have any definitive proof. All we can do is suspect the government is being operating in this. But here, the thing we have to be concerned about is you don't have to take my word, but please remember that these destructions from Planet X, from this huge brown dwarf star, are going to be far more devastating than anything that man can do. And when you see these power elite, the most powerful people in the world, including the British Crown, going underground in these multi-trillion-dollar facilities, you know that they're not creating earthquakes to kill themselves. Let me read to you from Marshall Master's book, Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide, page 137. Marshall Master's is a former science editor with CNN, Cable News Network. Quote, according to Phil Schneider was a government geologist who worked underground on these deep underground military bases, D-U-M-B, DUMBs. And according to Schneider, as of December 1995, that was 15 years ago, there were 131 underground bases worldwide. The subterranean variants are known in the black operations community as deep underground military bases, DUMBs. The submarine versions, that's those under the ocean, which exist beyond the continental shelf, are designated DUM-2 bases. Phil Schneider was murdered because he was doing lectures on what was going on with these underground facilities that he was a part of. And they tried many times to kill him. Finally, they succeeded. Anyway, reading on, Schneider focused his lectures on the subterranean dumb variant and offered the following facts. Quote, USA subterranean locations, DUMs, deep underground military bases, are typically located on government-owned land. For example, 9 deep underground military bases are situated under Nellis Air Force Base, north of Las Vegas. Average cost and size? Size 4.5 cubic miles. 4.5 cubic miles. That's 4.5 miles in one direction by 4.5 miles in a 90-degree direction from that by 4.5 miles down. So that's 4.5 cubic miles at a cost of $17 to $31 billion each. Largest base size and cost is located in Sweden. It is 30 cubic miles. That's 30 by in one direction, 30 in another direction, and 30 miles down at a cost of $2 trillion in Sweden. It took 5 years to build and was wholly underwritten by the United Nations. Range of depths. Depths range from 500 feet for older storage bases to just over 10,560 feet. That's about 2 miles for military installations, which is almost as deep as the East Rand mine in South Africa. That mine goes to a depth of over 11,700 feet. Average depth. During earthquakes, it is safer. This is something I didn't know. During earthquakes, it is safer to be deep underground than on the surface, which is why most deep underground military bases are at a depth of 5,700 feet. You just gave me an idea. This is an optimal depth in terms of survivability, without the need to engineer for heat and pressures associated with deeper depths. You just gave me an idea. They have these, what was the depth of these earthquakes? It was like, did you say six miles? Hello? Jimmy, are you there?
We're here, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever it is, you know what they may have been doing? They may have been creating these earthquakes as a test, okay, to see if these shallow, and I believe they're considered shallow earthquakes, could cause any damage to their underground facilities. Before you get into a car to drive it, you want to make sure it's been road tested, right? Before you go descending into a deep underground military base, you want to make sure it's been road tested.
Okay, John, we gotta take a bottom of the hour break there, and we'll pick it up when we get back. Your call's welcome, 1-866-841-1065. You want to talk to my guest, John DiNardo, in the next half hour. Stay with us, folks. All right, folks, welcome back to Radio X here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. Jimmy X here with you. And my guest this hour, John DiNardo, researcher on weather phenomenon, producer, host of the show Planet X and Bible Prophecy. And, John, before we go to the next show, the next caller real quick, just hang on the line there 1 second. Our phone number, 866-841-1065, if you want to have a question, if you want to make a comment. Just because I've been asked a couple of times in the chat room, again, you were a former electrical engineer and also a physics teacher at what level high school, did you say?
Governor Livingston Regional High School in Berkeley Heights, New Jersey.
Gotcha.
I taught 12th grade classes.
Gotcha, okay. Gotcha, okay. Because there were a couple of people that, I guess, missed the very beginning of this hour and they didn't hear what you had said. So, all right, thank you for that. And by the way, thanks to LaForce for the interesting phone call. Back to the phones we go. We have Dooms calling all the way from Scotland. Hello there, Dooms.
Hi there. My question is very short and sweet. It's just really, what is the best evidence for Planet X? Just for a novice like me that doesn't really look into this kind of thing.
Right from the federal government of the United States in about 1 minute. But I just read some of the evidence from Marshall Masters' book. Phil Schneider was a government employee, and I'm reading from the book. Philip Schneider, Schneider, as a geologist and engineer, he had top government clearances. Consequently, he visited many foreign countries and briefed their government leaders during his 17-year tenure with the U.S. government. For 11 of those years, he worked at Groom Lake in the Nellis Air Force Base area of the U.S. state of Nevada, north of Las Vegas. He co-invented shape charge blasting and rock deflagration technologies and was the son of a former Nazi U-boat commander. After World War II, his father helped to build the Nautilus, the world's first nuclear-powered submarine. The Maser laser rock deflagration devices that Philip Schneider invented are used to create underground tunnels and complexes by melting and agatizing rock. Used in tunnel boring systems, they can bore a 28-foot wide by 28-foot tall shaft at a rate of 7 miles per day. To clear the tunnel of haulage that the device did not agatize, workers would bore vertical holes to one side of the lateral shaft and use hoists. This would reduce the chance of rock dust getting into the machinery or the laborer's lungs or masks. Also, they would bore ventilation holes for fresh air. By working together, machines could accomplish the 7-mile rate while minimizing pollution. Well, this is the evidence now. I began to read before the break about the U.S. Deep underground military bases, briefly recapping, typically located on U.S. government land. There are 9 of them in 9 of these bases situated under Nellis Air Force Base north of Las Vegas. Average cost and size, et cetera, we went through that many miles, cubic miles. Largest base size located in Sweden, 30 cubic miles, cost of $2 trillion. Okay, now...
Let me interrupt you for a minute. I'm sorry. Dooms, listen, you asked your question. He's going to go on, and he wants to talk, about some what he feels is proof from the federal government with respect to what the mainstream media has printed and then things like that. I don't think you probably want to hang on the phone, so we'll let you go, but thanks for the phone call, okay? You can listen to what he has to say on air, okay?
Okay.
Okay, goodbye. Thanks for calling, Doom. Okay, John, go ahead. Sorry to interrupt you.
Okay, so let's see. We're talking about the average depth of these deep underground military bases. Quoting from Marshall Master's book, Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide, the author is Masters, M-A-S-T-E-R-S. During earthquakes, it is safer to be deep underground than on the surface, which is why most deep underground military bases are at a depth of 5,700 feet. It's a little over a mile. This is an optimal depth in terms of survivability without the need to engineer for heat and pressures associated with deeper depths, which, you know, of course, these heat and pressures at deeper depths would be depth. Some of these HARP-generated earthquakes could be tests to see how the underground areas survive the vibrations of these earthquakes. I think that makes them is probably the most plausible explanation as to why they have these HARP earthquakes in various parts of the world.
So you're saying, let me stop you for a minute. So you're saying that you believe that the government's testing out these facilities then? That's what you believe, okay?
Seeing how well they can withstand the earthquakes, because, you know, it would be horrifying. I imagine these power elite, the men who rule the world, they own and operate the governments of the world. They would be so concerned about their own safety that they would go to any extreme measures to make sure that they're going to be safe underground. The threat of being buried underground by an earthquake is terrifying, would be terrifying to them. So that makes sense to me, and that's the first. I'm glad your caller gave me that idea that this is the reason why they produce these HARP Tesla technology earthquakes. Now, I'm going to go on real quickly, and then I'm going to get to the articles. These types of subterranean deep underground military bases, older dumps dating back some 40 years, are located at the shallowest depths and are primarily used for storage. The newer, deeper dumps are either fully self-sufficient, multi-level military installations, or prisons. Imagine that. They've got prisons under there for guess who? That's my comment.
Us?
The number of subterranean...
Okay.
Pardon me?
Yeah. I said us?
Yeah. Okay. Number of subterranean dumps, deep underground military bases. In 1995, the active number was 131 deep underground military bases. That was 15 years ago. At present, an average of 2 new dumps is being completed each year, while several older sites at shallower depths are being removed from service. The current number of active deep underground military bases is unknown. Each deep underground military base requires anywhere from 1,800 to 10,000 skilled workers to construct, with wages of $4,000 to $40,000 per month, depending on position and tenure. all workers are bound by very tight non-disclosure security agreements. And I understand that some of these people have been murdered for putting videotapes on the web, on YouTube, of these deep underground bases. But then, that was before Jesse Ventura came out and really broke the story on television, True TV. I recorded that True TV episode, or a one-hour program called, titled Apocalypse 2012, on high-quality DVD. And it's, you can see it all over YouTube. All you have to do is go to YouTube and type in Jesse Ventura or Apocalypse 2012, and you'll get all the six episodes of that one-hour broadcast. Okay, right. Continuing on.
Yes.
On average, there are three deep underground military bases per state of the United States, of which approximately one-fourth, that's three times 48, it's almost 150 deep underground military bases. It's just incredible to hear this number. And people might question the credibility of that statement. But it says, of which approximately one-fourth of these 150 underground military bases are prison camps. Most are located in the lower 48 states. Transportation networks, two different types of tunnel networks, join all the deep underground military bases. Imagine that. They're all connected. One is a simple network of narrow maglev train system. That's magnetic levitation train system with electrically driven trains capable of traveling at twice the speed of sound. That's about 1,200 miles per hour. Incredible. Amongst these trains designated as United Nations prisoner transfer cars, each with 143 shackle placements for prisoners. Now, I'm not sure about this. I'm just reading from Marshall Master's book. Again, it's like, you know, in when you sprinkle salt or maybe a few pieces of contaminant in there, you don't know if you're going to get all the truth. I'm not sure if this is true or not. I'm just reading from the book, but I'm sure that a good deal of this information about the number of bases and the fact that they do exist is accurate, because we did see them presented on television. And so there, that evidence is true. And going on to power sources, grid bed nuclear motors the size of small refrigerators are used for their power sources in these deep underground military bases. Reverse engineered from captured alien craft. Each of these motors is powerful enough to power three aircraft carriers. I'm not sure about that.
All right, John, I'll tell you what. I mean, you're giving us a lot of information here, and I've got a couple of other people hanging on the phones. We've got to take a break coming up here again, our final one of this hour, and then we'll have one more segment to chat about this. So, folks, if you want to call into the show, your opportunity to do so, 1-866-841-1065, and ask a question or make a comment to my guest, John DiNardo, researcher on weather phenomenon, of course, producer, host of Planet X and Bible Prophecy. We're going to take a quick timeout, and we'll be back in 3 minutes with more Radio X here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned. All right, folks, it is Radio X, the final segment of the program for this Sunday afternoon. Jimmy X here with you, my guest this hour, John DiNardo. And our phone number, toll-free from anywhere, 1-866-841-1065. Let's go back to the phones and check in with, I believe it's Doug in Oklahoma. Hello, Doug, you there?
Hey, Jimmy X. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem, sir. What's on your mind?
Okay, I really appreciate this guest, and I've looked into this stuff for a long, long time. I find some of it a little bit surprising. Let me just ask a few things, and I'll just fire quickly. Any idea where they're coming up with the money to build such underground facilities? And, you know, a follow-up to that would be the displaced and extracted earth. I mean, it's got to be a huge pile. What do they do with the extracted earth?
Oh, with the extracted earth? I don't know.
Yeah, and so far as, you know,
it's melted. It melts the way of the earth, but you're right. I mean, I can tell you what I had seen in the Jesse Ventura television broadcast. He was with Jay Widener, another researcher into this whole these underground cities, and underneath the Denver airport, which was where the program was broadcast from, that's where these cities are, underground cities are located. And they were driving in the airport grounds, and they were seeing these huge, very regular shaped mounds of dirt, obviously dumped there by machinery, and they were all stacked, very large mounds of dirt stacked side by side for a large area. And Jesse Ventura said, there's no doubt that's been excavated, that dirt has been excavated for underground tunnels. And then they showed, laid on the ground near these large mounds of dirt, were these rectangular-shaped, concrete tunnel structures, large enough, you know, probably estimated to be numerous feet in width and height. So you had the tunnel components laid on top of the ground, and you have these huge mounds of dirt. In these underground cities, this is one case of what they do with the dirt. I don't know what happens with it in these other cases of these numerous other underground cities. It's a difficult question.
Okay, and then I did want to ask also, because I know we're short on time, you have a lot of articles in front of you and whatnot. Do you have a website yourself, or can you recommend websites where we can just kind of dive into this ourselves? Because I know we don't have the time to read the articles that you have in front of you.
Go to The Light of Day Radio Show, thelightofdayradioshow.com. I know it's a long name. If you go there, you'll find a Planet X page. It's got many archives of Planet X reports and audio reports and other kinds of reports.
May I ask one more question? When you speak of 2012, do you put much stock in the Mayan calendar, or is that just a date that you think that the brown dwarf, i.e. and or Planet X, is due to arrive?
Well, I do think that there's a strong possibility that the Mayan calendar is correct. I'm not sure. I mean, I really don't have any definitive proof as to the date. Dates are the hardest things and the most unwise factors to present. I think the wise person should just stay away from dates, because only God knows the exact date that these disasters will occur. However,
sure.
We know, as he tells us in the Bible, when you see these signs, know ye that it is near, even at the doors. And we're seeing signs of just incredibly horrific signs of earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, windstorms, epic flooding all over the United States, all over Europe, snowstorms that are killing many people. Britain is now experiencing the worst snowstorms in modern history. It just goes on and on. So we're seeing those signs, and we're seeing a tremendous surge in earthquake activity, deep earthquakes, severe earthquakes, etc. So the signs are there. Let's say that I'm sure that we're going to go through a lot of affliction, geological, meteorological and geological affliction right now, starting right now. I mean, it's beginning, it has been going on, but the intensification is pretty conspicuous. The cold weather right now is severe. We're getting Arctic air coming down from the North Pole. And I think I'm really concerned that we're going to see major earthquakes in the United States, because we've been seeing major earthquakes around the world already. And it's just an amazing miracle that the United States has not been one of the nations that has been severely hurt by earthquakes. So it's bound to happen to us very soon. Same goes for volcanoes.
I agree 100%. And I appreciate your time, Mr. Bernardo, and thanks for taking my call, Jimmy X. And also, you know, if you might want to speak, I don't want to monopolize the rest of the time we have left, but insofar as the possibility of polar shifts occurring, but I'll hang up and take that off the line, and thanks a lot, guys. Thanks.
All right, Doug, thanks for the phone call. John, briefly, why don't you...
Okay, the scientists tell us that this planet comes in on a cometary orbit. That is a very long elliptical orbit that would approximate a bicycle chain. If you look at the pedal wheel sprocket of a bicycle can be compared to our sun. That's the pedal wheel sprocket, pedal sprocket wheel. The rear axle sprocket wheel can be compared to a distant sun 50 billion miles away. This is what scientists and astronomers tell us. So our solar system is common, like many other solar systems in that it has two suns. One is a dead sun 50 billion miles away. They don't teach it in grade school, but astronomers know about it. And the other is our sun. So consider those two suns like the sprocket wheels on a bicycle, the pedal sprocket wheel and the rear axle sprocket wheel. The bicycle chain is like, describes the path, the cometary path of this huge brown dwarf star, estimated, again, I'm looking at scientists' estimation, to be about eight times the size of Jupiter. Jupiter is 318 Earth masses. So if this thing is considered a rather small brown dwarf star, about eight times the mass of Jupiter, multiply eight Jupiters times 318 Earths, which is what the estimation by definition is of the mass of this brown dwarf star. It comes out to be around, wow, the couple thousand Earth masses, at least two to 3,000 Earth masses. So as a result, you know, gravitational, the universal law of gravitation presented by Sir Isaac Newton states that the gravitational force of attraction, the magnitude of that force, is directly proportional to the mass of body A times the mass of body B divided by the distance between the two masses squared. So the larger the body, the mass of each body, the greater the gravitational pull. So this brown dwarf star, which is seems to be, from what scientists tell us, to be about a couple thousand Earth masses, when it comes by over planet, the top of planet Earth, it is going to exert a gravitational pull that's more or less like a bowler. You know, when a bowler releases the ball from his hand and throws his arm straight up in the air, he puts a spin on that ball. Well, that's the kind of spin that would be put on planet Earth as this thing goes whizzing over the top of Earth. And what it does is just slide, rolls planet Earth over vertically. Now, this has happened in the past. We have absolute geological evidence that this pole shift has occurred in the past. One of the most glaring pieces of evidence is that we have numerous mastodons. These are giant elephants, bigger than elephants, woolly mammoths. They're a brown fur. They're buried under many tens of feet of ice in the Arctic region, in the Siberian tundra. What happened was when they excavated these various mastodons, many hundreds were found. They found tropical vegetation in their mouths and in their stomachs, indicating that at the instant they were frozen, they were eating tropical. They were in a tropical zone. The only thing, the way that this could happen is that they were flash frozen instantly. The meat was still fresh. When the sled dogs of these Alaskan or Siberian owners were given the meat was still fresh. They found it was edible. And the only way this could happen is if the flash freezing occurs at a very deep temperature, very low temperature.
John, I'm sorry to interrupt you, John, and apologize for those of you who are hanging on the line. We're simply out of time on the program. John, I want to thank you for coming on, though, and I want to encourage folks, if you want to learn some more information on what John has to say, you can catch his show, Planet X and Bible Prophecy, micro1650am.com, Sunday nights at 9 o'clock Eastern. Quickly, John, you're also on the shortwave. Give us the call letters of the station.
It's WWRB, but the thing to remember is the frequency. It's 3185, Sundays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 3185 shortwave.
All right, 3185 shortwave. John, thank you so much for joining me, and thanks to everyone for listening. And again, I apologize for not getting to all the calls. We'll try it again next week. Have a great day, folks.